I'm Dan Meisner, and this is Work in Progress, a show about the meaning and identity we find in work from Slack. This week, we're hosting a bake-off. Coming up, we have the story of a cookie entrepreneur who had to break the law just to get started. But first, have you ever wondered who puts the fortunes in the fortune cookies?
In our Queens facility, we currently produce about 4 million cookies a day.
James Wong is the head of purchasing at New York's Wonton Food Company. You probably cracked open one of their fortune cookies the last time you went for Chinese food.
We have 18 machines that does close to 200 cookies a minute.
James buys all the ingredients for those millions of fortune cookies.
When they first come out of the oven, they are kind of like small pancakes that are still soft. That's when we have the opportunity to actually put paper in and fold it into shape.
Besides flour and sugar, the main ingredient in fortune cookies is fortunes. For over 40 years, those fortunes were written by James's colleague, Donald Lau. But he recently stepped aside to focus on his other duties as chief financial officer. And after an exhaustive external search for Donald's successor, Wonton Foods decided to keep the fortune writing in-house. So they named James the new chief fortune writer. But he assumes the reins at a critical time.
We have about 10,000 fortunes that goes into these cookies.
Which doesn't seem like nearly enough for the millions of fortune cookies they produce.
One of the common complaints that we have been getting over the years is the repeats of fortunes.
There are a few reasons Wonton Food Company has a relative lack of fortunes.
Politics is definitely one of them, especially in the current environment. Some were grammatically incorrect. Another is we're finding out more and more that the word romance is probably not the best word to put into these fortunes.
A woman experiencing marital problems once threatened to sue the Wonton Food Company after her husband, who was a traveling businessman, opened this fortune.
Romance is in the air in your next trip. That was not good.
So the number of new fortunes expected annually from James is high.
So people have been telling me it should be a couple of thousand. I just flat out say I wouldn't be able to do that.
150 fortunes a month would be a full-time job for anyone. But James is keeping not just his purchasing duties, but he's also the head of IT. What is the head of IT doing writing fortunes?
I'm not sure. I think that would be a good conversation for me and Donald to have.
It's as though James has become a kind of accidental philosopher.
I guess, that would be a perfect way to describe that.
Perhaps some modesty from James. He's worked at Wonton Foods his whole life. His uncle owns the company. And before he became chief fortune writer, James had contributed the occasional fortune.
Before I was officially told that I am the head fortune writer, things seem to come easier.
Despite his technical background, colleagues appreciated James's thoughtful optimism.
But once you're under pressure to be productive, it's not that easy anymore.
It's not like there's a course in fortune writing, and even though they work right next to each other, Donald Lau hasn't shared any real guidance. So James is taking a personal approach to creating his own fortune writing style.
I think a big influence would be my dad. He is what you would call a very traditional kind of Confucian. The core of Confucianism is the development of society based on the family unit and respecting your elders and treating everyone the right way.
Also, James's busy schedule actually helps.
Fortune writing is not something that you can sit down and think about, at least not for me. I get inspiration from very mundane daily things that would happen. I do programming and then decide on how much flour to buy for the next month. And then thinking about whether this computer is communicating with the other computer, was there an IP address problem or a DNS problem? Throughout all these various jobs, I get to interact with a lot of people and I face a lot of different situations. there will be occasions where I would have certain thoughts on particular situations that that a person might be facing, some difficulties they might be having, and it might not always be appropriate for me to approach them with these thoughts that I have. And these are usually things that I would kind of jot down, and it might turn into a fortune.
Sometimes James's intent is less friendly and more fatherly.
The person that I write to the most, in my mind, is my daughter.
And what does he want to say to her? He's working on one right now.
Failure is mother to success. That's not actually something that's published yet. I'm trying to form it into a more understandable sentence. But the sentiment basically is, don't get discouraged when you fail at certain things.
James's daughter recently struggled with a school entrance exam and was disappointed.
But I was basically explaining to her, this is not the end of the world. There are other chances that she can always do better.
James minds personal interactions for fortunes. I get it. But what happens when millions of people James doesn't know read that specifically inspired advice?
That's a heavy burden to carry. I kind of liken that to being a journalist. They have big audiences. They have to be mindful of what they say, what they're reporting is accurate, or if it carries a certain message that's leaning in certain views. I kind of have to keep those in mind.
Yet, he hopes there is a universality to his fortunes.
If someone reads their fortune and immediately it clicks with a situation that's happening to them or an aspect of their life, and they would immediately remember that, if they would actually carry that piece of paper with them or just memorize that saying, and in some way were able to connect and use it in a helpful way, that is what I'm trying to capture. I would have achieved my goal.
You are going to have a pleasant experience. Dwelling on the negative simply contributes to its power. You will travel far and wide for both pleasure and business. How many of you believe in psychokinesis? Raise my hand. Oh, that is a dumb joke. Work in Progress is an original series from Slack. Slack is where work happens, at places like Sundance Institute, the organization behind the film festival, and Artmoi, which makes cataloging software for artists. More on them at the end of the show. Check us out at slack.com/podcast or tweet us at Slack Stories. A minute ago, we heard from James Wong about what it's like to be responsible for all those fortunes inside all those fortune cookies. Listening to James, one of the things that struck me was how his job is both big and small at exactly the same time. On one hand, James's work operates at huge scale. He's got enormous machines producing millions of cookies every year. But on the other hand, James's work operates at a much smaller, more individual level. You see, James's job is to create these tiny little moments with his fortunes. A chuckle, an eye roll, a moment of reflection. And all of it is prompted by just a line or two written on a small slip of paper. But the thing is, sometimes something as simple as a cookie can have a much bigger impact on a person's life. And that's what our next story is about. Producer Mio Edelman has the story of one woman whose baking helped her find more than just a career. It helped her find meaning and independence through her work.
Have a cookie dough in the fridge right now.
I can check for you.
Tanika made some last night.
Do you want us to help you go get it?
Yes, please do. It's really heavy. I cannot pick it up, okay. So.
All right.
I have two people determined.
All right. Let's
Colette DeVito has shown up for her shift, and there are cookies to be baked.
Colette, do you think these cookies are good to package?
Yes, this.
Okay.
There are cookies to be shipped. And in my case, there are cookies to be eaten.
Oh my goodness.
Mmm.
Yep.
The cinnamon is really nice. It's like a chocolate chip cookie with cinnamon, basically.
Yes.
The cookies are amazing. So amazing that that's what they're called.
It's called an amazing cookie.
An amazing cookie, okay.
At the bottom of the cookie, it's crunchy. And the top of the cookie is chewy and soft.
Okay, so we have some dough here. Are you going to work? Where are you going to work?
I am going to bake these cookies here in this kitchen. It's to use the top oven.
Using the top oven?
Yes.
How many cookies are on order right now?
Right now, there's 55,000 cookies now.
You have to make 55,000 cookies right now?
Right, so that's in the matter of a couple weeks, right, Colette?
Yes.
This small baking operation is producing 1,000 handmade cookies a day. Demand has exploded thanks to some pretty major publicity. Publicity that goes beyond just the amazing cookies.
Hi, my name is Colette D. Fedor. I am 26. I live in Boston. I own a cookie company. The name of my company is called Colette's Cookies.
Colette doesn't just work here. She's the founder of Colette's Cookies. She's the boss. And she has Down syndrome. When I read about this, I was amazed. How does a young woman with Down syndrome create and operate a successful business? And what were the circumstances that led her to this venture?
This is how to bake the cookies. Mm-hmm. It's to put more than 3 pans out with a parchment paper on top of the pan.
The wax paper?
Yes.
So I had no idea what that meant, what her future was going to be, what my role was going to be besides being her mom, what other avenues I was going to need to learn about. So I had no idea.
Colette's Cookies is based in Boston, but Colette was born in Connecticut.
Hi, my name is Rosemary Alfredo. I'm Colette's mom. When she was younger, and I'm sure every parent would probably that has a child with disabilities would agree with me on this, there's always that thought, what's her life going to be like? You know, is she ever going to be able to take care of herself? What if she can't? What's the road for that? Your goal is that one road you'd really love for your child to become independent and be able to take care of themselves, because you're always thinking, well, if something happens to me, you know, who does she have?
Luckily, it seems Colette's independent streak was baked into her DNA.
The hardest thing of me, born with Down syndrome, is a family telling me what to do and not to do.
Do you think that people tell you what to do and what not to do too much because they think that you don't know what to do and what not to do?
Yes.
She really didn't see herself being any different, and she always had a very outgoing personality. A lot of the kids wanted to be friends with her because she was a lot of fun. And then in middle school, a lot of things changed. I mean, she couldn't be in the regular classrooms. She could, but she would not be doing the same work that they were doing. That's what made her feel really bad about herself. And then socially, the kids really kind of grow up at such a fast rate today. And the girls were all into kind of wearing cute little outfits and short skirts and flirting with the boys and hanging out at the movie theaters and hanging out at the malls. And it really wasn't Colette's thing. So she got less and less phone calls. She got less and less invites.
I hate hearing stories like that. Same thing sort of happened to me in middle school because I was a total nerd. Still, I can't imagine what it would be like for someone like Colette. But then she found something that set her apart in a good way.
In high school, as a freshman year, I started taking a baking class, and I really enjoyed it.
Colette definitely felt a very big sense of empowerment through baking. Even the baking teacher said, you may want to consider this a vocation. She's probably the best one in my class.
What? What's so funny?
I didn't know.
Huh?
I have no idea.
You're laughing at the way I make the cookies.
No.
I made the cookies a bit too big.
No. Yes, you did.
With this type of success and a ton of spirit, I should mention she was also on the cheerleading squad, Colette wanted to do more after high school.
Well, Colette was very animate about going to college like her brother and her sister. She was not going to a school that was going to isolate her to be just around a population that was special needs.
Colette enrolled in a special program at Clemson University in South Carolina.
Oh, I noticed a difference in her in 3 months she was there. I started hearing from her less and less. She had a social life that was unbelievable. It was to the point that I would FaceTime with her and sometimes she'd hang up with me, hang up on me. And the first time she hung up on me, I was overjoyed. She was like, Mom, seriously, I just talked to you yesterday. But then I thought, oh my gosh, this is happening. This is really happening.
The most important thing to live independently is to how to cook for myself, how to be as a good roommate, how to be cleaned and organized, and also pay my own bills.
Colette had achieved her goal of becoming independent, but then she came home to Connecticut.
Yeah, it was really hard for her to come home. Definitely, her growing level of independence was absolutely not matched by society's view of her.
The most thing that makes me get frustrated is to find a paying job.
Despite holding a college degree and having had a few summer volunteer jobs, Colette could not get work. This is Colette's sister, Blake.
When Colette was getting down and upset with jobs and not really doing what she wanted to do and not finding one, my mom decided she should open up her own company just to keep her motivated. So she started selling her cookies in a local restaurant, but it was very small.
What do you like about baking?
Is to make fun ideas in food.
Fun ideas in food?
Yes.
When you bring something out of the oven and it's perfect, how do you feel?
More than feeling inspired, I would say feeling confident.
It makes you feel confident?
Yes, it is.
Baking and selling cookies was good for Colette's self-esteem, but still, the opportunities in her small community were limited. So Rosemary decided to move with Colette to Boston. She felt that the support system for people with disabilities is much stronger in Massachusetts than in Connecticut. Despite this, Colette continued struggling to find work.
So I had said to her, well, you can offer yourself up as an intern, prove yourself, and then, you know, hopefully you'll turn into a paying job.
Colette finally found an internship at a school working with young kids who have similar disabilities as hers. It was great.
And they loved her, and she was there for a year.
But after the internship ended, this happened.
They had an ad for someone in Colette's position, a paying job for the summer. So Colette went up back over to the school, and they said, oh my gosh, you're here. That's great. We'll start you right away. And she worked for about 3 weeks. And I finally said to her, when are you getting your paycheck? And she said, I don't know. And she ended up talking to this young woman that ran these after-school programs. And the woman was infuriated that she expected money.
Why didn't they pay you?
They don't want to pay me because I am some person who have a disability, don't want to get paid.
I even left messages for the woman and left her an email saying, this seems like you're discriminating. Never heard from her again.
What do you do if all you've ever wanted is to be independent and no one will give you a chance to do your thing?
Like this. Use your fingers and twist it.
After you've made the ball, you twist the dough.
Yes.
To give it that shape, you mean?
It's a half a crunchy.
Oh, the twisting makes it crunchy.
Yes, it is.
I didn't know that.
Huh. Now you do.
After the unfortunate school situation in Boston, Rosemary suggested Colette start baking again. Colette's sister Blake explains what happened next.
So a market here in the North End, Colette brought her cookies over and asked them to sell them. And they tried them and ended up loving them and said yes. And then CBS News heard of the story and it went viral. And the online website has gotten orders every single day, all day long.
One sec. You need my help?
I did, yes. I just need your help is to give me a pan with the cookies. I have to open.
Okay, wait, I'll bring the tray over and you open the door, okay?
There, like this. Like that. not so often.
How long are they going to cook for?
9 minutes.
9 minutes? Do you set a timer?
This is a feel-good story, right? Disabled woman overcomes prejudice, even discrimination, to forge her own independent and meaningful career. That's why the news crews came. But there's a part of Colette's story the news reporters didn't cover, one that makes her accomplishment all the more extraordinary. You see, Colette defied a court order moving from Connecticut to Boston. She had to break the law to pursue her dreams of independence.
Oh, yes, you're talking about the guardianship issue, and I'm glad you brought that up. First of all, I would recommend to any parent that has a child with disabilities to not go for power of guardianship.
When Colette became an adult at 18, Rosemary and her ex-husband handed power of Colette's guardianship to the state of Connecticut. It's a common practice once a disabled child comes of age in order to protect them.
But what happens is, once you apply for guardianship, you put your relationship as a guardian in the court's hands. It's not up to you anymore.
And that is what happened when Rosemary and Colette's father divorced.
He was trying to tell my mom we should not live in a big city of Boston. It's not safe at all.
Colette's father didn't want her to move to Boston after college.
He stirred the whole thing up, just said that this wasn't really Colette's doing. It was what I want for my life. Nobody should listen to her because she's brainwashed by me. And so it was kind of all this post-secondary divorce crap. And I asked the judge to take us out of the mix and just ask Colette. She just graduated from Clemson. If Colette told me I want to live in the group home in Connecticut and work at McDonald's, that's what's going to make her happy, that's what she'd be doing.
If I'm going to go back to Connecticut, I am going to be out of my mind.
Because her parents couldn't agree, the judge intervened.
Oh, they said she should be in a group home, and Colette should not have any decision-making in her life for herself whatsoever.
After working so hard to gain control of her life, Colette was now facing a lifetime of institutionalization.
I told the judge, I'm leaving. And the judge said, you can't. You can't go. And I said, stop me. I'll have every rights advocacy all over this. You're stripping Colette of all of her rights. Colette and I packed up and left. And he said, if you leave, give me a warrant out for your arrest. And I said, well, then I'll be on every news station there is. Arrest me.
So a warrant was issued. But luckily, the state of Massachusetts agreed with Rosemary and refused to turn in Colette.
Those look really good. Are you going to put them on the rack?
Yeah.
And how long do they have to sit and cool?
15 minutes. They need to be cool before one of us has to put the cookies in the bags.
Okay.
Colette, are these the cookies for the Oscars?
You guys need to package is the best kind of the cookies for the Oscars.
Today, instead of languishing in a group home in Connecticut, Colette is preparing cookies she'll be handing out to movie stars at the Oscars.
Who's your favorite movie celebrity?
Matthew McConaughey.
Matthew McConaughey. So are you hoping he might have a few of your cookies?
Yes.
All right, all right, all right.
Oh my God, that is one of my favorite lines of him all the time. He's my favorite actor.
Well, yeah, just know he's got an absolutely gorgeous wife and children, so you ain't got no chance.
If he does get a divorce, I am open. Seriously, I am open. Did you have
I think in the end, I just really hope that this whole platform that Colette's on and all of this awareness and all these accomplishments that she's had, I just hope that she changes the world's view on people with disabilities. The next time you see somebody that, you know, has challenges, that you don't see them for their challenges. You say, you think of Colette and you say, I wonder what those person's qualities and skills are and gifts are.
Work in Progress is an original series from Slack. Slack is where work happens, at places like Artmois, a company that makes cataloging software for artists. Here's how they use Slack.
Hi, my name is Emily, and I'm the marketing specialist for Artmois. moi as in the French word for me. So art moi is my art. Art moi has created the world's first cloud-based artwork registry that can track the lifespan of a single work of art, much like the ISBN system for the publishing industry. It is free for artists to use so they can document provenance, declare copyright, and track all of the details about each of their works. We use Slack in so many ways. We use it to track our conversations, our live chat support feature, and social media, and GitHub. Also, we have found that some things are much easier said and understood through GIFs. So I would recommend it with a great big smile and a big thank you to you guys. So thanks. Bye.
To find out more about Slack or to get in touch, visit us. We're at slack.com/podcast or tweet us @SlackStories. I'm Dan Meisner. Thanks for listening.